Okay, what we're going to talk about today is a very important malacha. I guess it's hard to say that because all of the malachas are equally important, but it's something that I think in particular for women is very relevant and something that many people may not be so aware of. So it's something just for us to be thinking about as we observe Shabbos. And that is the malacha of Tzoveya. As we know, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos, Tafayin Gimel, that all of the malachas on Shabbos, all of the prohibitions on Shabbos, were instituted based off of what was done in order to construct a Mishkan. So we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was asked to build a Mishkan, and the Psukim and Sefer Shmos describe in great detail exactly how he was supposed to do every single detail of the construction. But from that is where we derive all of the different malachos on Shabbos. So whatever was necessary to build a Mishkan is what, in turn, we are not allowed to do on Shabbos. So say, for example, they had to write on all the beams. They had to reconstruct the Mishkan many times as they traveled from one location to another. They took the Mishkan down, put it back up, took it down again, put it back up. And they had to know where the beams all were supposed to be situated in order to be able to put it back up again. So they used to write on the beams. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. They would write numbers for each one. And that is why we have a malacha of Kosef, because that's what they did in the Mishkan in order to have a construction that was going to be feasible. And the same goes with all of the malachas. So we come to a malacha of Tzoveya, which is you're not allowed to change the color of something from being one color to another. Now, where did we find that in the Mishkan? Rashi explains, if you know, there were many curtains that covered over the Mishkan, and each one was very particularly designed with different kinds of colors, different shades. And therefore, Rashi says that from there is where we learn the malacha of Tzoveya, because in order to make the curtains, they needed to dye certain fabrics, and that is why we have a malacha of Tzoveya. So you'll say, none of us really are involved in that kind of activity today. Some people do, but most of us in our own private lives really do not get so involved in dyeing materials. So why is this relevant to us at all? But I'd like us to think about as we go through the shiur, and this is really what we're going to focus on, is the following. Anybody here drinks coffee? No. I've never drank a coffee in my life. So for those who don't, I'm with you. So is there a malacha of Tzoveya when you put coffee into hot water? Ever think about that? So why am I talking to women about that? It's not because women drink more coffee than men. But let's then shift this to other aspects of life. That's one question. How about the fact that we have like sippy cups or baby bottles that change colors? Anyone ever seen those? Why do they change colors? It's a safety measure. In order that if somebody pours burning hot liquid into the sippy cup, the child won't drink it because the parent can see immediately that it changes colors, that it's a different temperature than it's supposed to be. Are you allowed to fill those up on Shabbos? When it's cold, it's going to turn blue, and when it's hot, it's going to turn red. Is that permissible on Shabbos? How about putting a diaper on a child on Shabbos? If we know, sometimes when the child has a dirty diaper, there's a yellow strip in the middle of the diaper on the outside that turns blue. Nobody knows what I'm talking about? Right? Okay. Yeah?
Why is the coffee an issue if it's turning the water into water, but it's only if you dye something with that water? Because if you dye a material with that water,
That's the question. That's what we're going to have to see. What are the parameters of this malacha? And finally, the reason why I really want to discuss this is because makeup and lipstick on Shabbos are also connected to this, and that's a very serious question. So let us go through it. And I think it's a very important discussion, a very interesting one. Let us get directly into the material. The Rambam writes in Perek Tes, Hilchos Shabbos, Halacha Yud Gimel. Let's see the Rambam together, where he says the following. Ein hatzoveya chayiv. The Rambam is defining the nature of the malacha. And the Rambam says, the only time it's considered to be tzoveya is if it's something that's of permanent nature. So I don't know what a good example would be, but let's say I have something that is so temporary, and by doing so it changes the color of whatever it is that changes the color of whatever it is that I'm holding onto or looking at or dealing with. That, says the Rambam, if it's only of temporary nature, that would not be considered a malacha. Aval tzeva she'ena miskayim klal. If you have something that is totally temporary, pater, says the Rambam. Now, what does pater mean? This is a very important phrase to be aware of. Whenever the Rambam says pater, it doesn't mean it's allowed. Mutter means allowed. Pater means pater avalaser, which means you're not going to be punished, but it is an isser midirabanan. It is not part of the biblical prohibition, but it still is pater avalaser. It is asser midirabanan. Shaharei atam avir l'shaito ve'enot saveya klum. And as a general rule, the Rambam adds here, anytime I have a malacha that is not miskayemes, anytime I have a malacha that is not going to be of permanent nature, I am not going to violate the Isser de'oraisa. Where does this come from? The Magid Mishnah there comments that this is really an offshoot from the malacha of Ksiva. The malacha of Kosev in the Mishkan, the Gemara tells us, was only when it was a Ksiva ha-miskayemes. So when they built the Mishkan, as I said, they took a permanent marker and they wrote on each one of, not a marker, but whatever was permanent then, and they wrote on each one of the beams exactly where it needed to go, exactly which number it was. And that was something that was going to be of permanent nature. That was not going to change. It wasn't going to disappear later on. So this is really where the whole discussion comes from. There's actually a very rich discussion in Eretz Yisrael about doctors who work on Shabbos. So a doctor has to chart medication on Shabbos, a doctor has to take notes about whatever the patient's needs are, or whatever situations arise, and that's very important. The reason why it's important is because the doctor's not going to be able to be there 24 hours a day. So the next doctor that's going to relieve the first one has to know what happened over the course of Shabbos in order to know how to treat the patient properly. So what happens? You have a doctor who definitely needs to take notes on Shabbos. So there were those who said, well, the Rambam says over here that when we're talking about ksiva or tzoveya or anything of that nature, if it's not of a permanent nature, it is not going to be a violation of an issur d'oraisa. And therefore, there were those who came up with this great idea. Let's make a pen with disappearing ink, that it will not last more than 24 hours. So the doctor will write the whole Shabbos, not a problem at all. And then after Shabbos is over, before it disappears, they'll quickly put everything into the system and make sure that that information is going to be saved. There were those who had that idea, and it sounded like a really great idea to get around the problem. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I believe, was very opposed to it, and he said, no. If a doctor has a heter, if a doctor has a right to violate Shabbos in order to take care of a patient, then he should do it the right way. What's going to happen? Let's say the doctor is taking his notes with the disappearing ink the whole Shabbos, and then Shabbos is over, and he has another emergency. And he doesn't have a chance to type it into the computer. He doesn't have a chance to then transfer the information to a place which is going to be more permanent. So now all that information is potentially going to be lost. So you're willing to take that risk? Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was of the opinion that if the doctor has a right to do this, then he should do it. And we shouldn't hold back by using this invisible ink or that kind of pen. But the whole premise really comes from this halacha, where we find that by kosev, if it's a ksiva she'ena shel kayama, it's not a problem. And the same by tzoveya, if you're coloring something, dyeing something, but it's not shel kayama, it would not be a problem at all. So because we assume that it's only considered tzoveya when it's of permanent nature, so that's why we have to think about changing colors on sippy cups. Obviously, that's not of permanent nature. That is going to change back and forth over and over again throughout Shabbos. And that is why there was a major discussion about photo-gray lenses. Right? Anyone have those? Almost nobody wears glasses in here, but do you use photo gray lenses?
I used to.
You used to. So did you use them on Shabbos? There's no right or wrong answer. Don't worry. It's okay. Don't be embarrassed. It's okay. So photo gray lenses is a big shaila. It's a big discussion in the poskim whether or not it is permissible to use photo gray lenses. In fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein actually writes what his opinion was, and he says that he thinks it's not a problem. Why does he see that it's not a problem? He says it's okay because there's a cover that comes over the lenses when it's sunny outside, which is really not, it's not really accurate based on what we know about how photograde lenses work. There is nothing that becomes created as one goes outside. All that happens is that when the, I looked it up, when organic photochromic molecules are exposed to UV rays, they undergo a chemical process, as we all know. So therefore, there's nothing new that's being created, but really all that's happening is you're going outside and a chemical process then begins, which makes the lenses themselves turn a different color. And that is the question whether or not that would be permissible, or is that an act of tzoveya? By walking outside, am I violating the malacha of tzoveya? So there's a fascinating discussion about this in one of Rav Asher Weiss's shuvas, where he tells us his feeling. And I want to go through that together with you because I think he raises a point that's a very fascinating approach in general that he has. So let's see what he says. Ach be'emes nira, number beis. He says, it seems to me, de'ein lahachmer bazeh, he thinks that we should not be machmer. We should allow one to use the photogray lenses. De'gara mitzviya she'ena miskayemes. Because this is not even a ksiva she'ena shakayama, a tzviya she'ena shakayama. As we said, the Rambam tells us, if you have something that's of permanent nature, that's an issa d'oraisa. If you have something that's of temporary nature, that's a issa d'rabbanan. If I have something that's less than that, now how can you have less? Either it's permanent or temporary. The answer is there can be something that's what we refer to as aroi d'aroi. It's so temporary, it's really not made to last at all. Not that it's going to disappear at some point. It's completely temporary. So in that case, he says, "Kiven the chol hatzvia arayis uregayis me'etzam tiva." This kind of change that happens to the lens is so temporary. If you go inside and you no longer have sunlight, it's going to immediately reverse back to what it was. It's not going to last at all. V'gvan ha'adasha mishtanar kol eis belechta uvukumo kishaholach mimakama ar lemakam atzil. It's going to continue to change colors as you go from one location to another, as you go from the sunlight to the shade, and therefore he says that there would be no problem at all. This is not even an issa d'rabbanan because it's not even temporary. It's nothing. It's nothing at all. It's as if it's not even changing because it changes for such a short period of time and the circumstance changes so easily. Now here's his big chiddush. V'nira od kemoshe bi'arti b'makam acher. And he says, now that we're getting into this discussion about photogray lenses and the fact that that is only considered to be arai, he says, I think that this has implications in other areas of Hilchos Shabbos at all. Timalacha hamisracheshes lelomaisa malacha mitzad ha'adam. If there's a malacha hamisracheshes, which means a malacha that just happens. If a malacha happens, lelomaisa malacha mitzad ha'adam, without me trying to do a malacha, ela kitotza mehanhaga tivis shel ha'adam, it's the outcome of a natural and normal activity that I'm doing, ein aleha shem malacha klal. That would not be defined as a malacha, which is a tremendous chiddush. Can anyone think of a great example? Yeah.
Like the doorbells that video you, and then like you're just
doorbells that video you. Right, I'm walking by. The example I thought of, you're very correct. The example I thought of is sometimes you walk down the street and a light goes on. Right, many people's homes have automatic lights, so. Am I doing a malacha when I walk by the house? Or do you say, no, I'm just walking? So let's see what he says. Vedanti kach legavichola betasmonas apnea. If somebody has apnea, shamutu lo lishtamish b'machshir ha-nidlak. If you have a machine that is already on, but the way that the machine works is, at certain times when the breathing gets, I don't know exactly when it changes, when it modulates, so then the machine goes on to kick in with more energy. So would I be allowed to use that, or perhaps not? Kasher umafsik linshom be'emtza shnaso, umafsik lifol kasher umaskol shuv linshom mekochas atzmo, demachshir hamufal umechube ayideh hanashima v'ha'adara eina malacha. He says, what I'm doing right now is not a malacha at all. What I'm doing is I'm sleeping and I'm breathing. Now it so happens that as I breathe, there's something else that has an implication as a result of the breath that I'm taking. But that's not a malacha. A malacha means I'm taking my hands and deliberately trying to do something. But here, where I'm really not involved in that kind of activity at all, and all I'm doing is breathing, that would not be a problem. V'kach legabi haholech l'tumo, umafsik keren or. Somebody who's walking down the block, holech l'tumo means I have nothing at all that I'm trying to do other than walk, and then suddenly a light goes on. V'kach nira b'inyanenu da haholech l'darko v'ha'adasha mishanas tziva. And he says, therefore, the same would be in our case. When I'm walking down the street, and now it happens to have some sunlight, and as a result of my walking down the street, my glasses are now going to turn a different color. Gara tvei migorim ve'ena malacha klal, he says, this is not considered to be a malacha at all, and that is his argument. Now again, this is a very broad argument that may have implications all around various different areas of Hilchos Shabbos, but it's something very interesting to consider, something very interesting to think about. So now let's move on to, how does this apply to women's makeup on Shabbos? And I think that that's a very important question. First of all, the Gemara tells us in Masechah Shabbos that Ezra HaSofer established 10 different takanos. He made 10 institutions for the Jewish people because he thought that there were certain deficiencies in Jewish life. So what was one of them? So one of the takanas was that you should have a salesman who travels from one city to another, from one town to the next, on Erev Shabbos to sell perfume and fragrance and makeup for women in the community. How fascinating is that? Like, Ezra felt that that was a takana that needed to be made. So what you see from that is, I think, something very important. That beautifying ourselves is not something we should feel uncomfortable about. It's something that Ezra felt was very important back in his days. So obviously it has to be in moderation, and it has to be appropriate. But it's something that Ezra felt was a very important part, that people should feel the opportunity and the right, and they should feel good about the fact that they have the ability to do things to cosmetically make themselves look better. And I think that that is an amazing Gemara. It's an amazing comment of the Gemara about Ezra. And as a result of that, Ezra made an institution that we have to have people peddling around to sell makeup and perfume in order that people should have the opportunity to feel good about themselves and to look good as they would like to for Shabbos. And I think that that's just a beautiful way to frame this whole discussion. So the Mishnah says in Masechta Shabbos, Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Beis. Let's see a number Gimel. Says the Mishnah, Hakocheles v'haposekes, Rabbi Lezer Mechayev v'chachamim osrim mishum shvus. So the Gemara says if you have somebody who puts on makeup, that is considered to be either a malacha de'araisa or a malacha midirabbanan. That's the machlokes between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim. Either a machlokes de'araisa or de'rabbanan. Now the Gemara tells us, Kocheles mishum tzavas, what's the problem with putting on makeup? So the Gemara says that putting on makeup on Shabbos is considered to be a malacha ab soveya. The same way that you're not allowed to take a dye and to change the color of a fabric, so too we're not allowed to take a dye and change the color of our face. That would be a malacha ab soveya on Shabbos. V'chein hayir ab shim ben alazar omer mishim rabbi lazar, isha lo taver srak al paneh b'shabbos mipnei shetzovas. Now, this Gemara does not just remain as a Gemara. This is a Gemara that is actually quoted lahalacha in the Shulchan Aruch. So let's see. The Shulchan Aruch says on Simon Shin Gimel, Aser le'isha, this is a direct quotation, Aser le'isha shataver b'shabbos srak al paneha. Shulchan Aruch says a woman, now the assumption is that men don't wear makeup, that's the assumption of the Shulchan Aruch, Aser le'isha, a woman is not allowed, shataver b'shabbos srak al paneha mishum tzavea. He quotes this Gemara and he says that a woman is not allowed to put makeup on her face on Shabbos, because the problem is that that is going to be a malacha of tzoveya. Okay, sounds pretty straightforward, sounds pretty clear. Let's look at what Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about lipstick. Okay? Let's look what Rav Moshe writes about lipstick. So when it comes to makeup, it seems very, very clear. There's really no wiggle room here. However, Rav Moshe then gets into other things, whether maybe we should be makel for, I think it's called powder blush. Am I wrong? Something? No. Correct me if I'm wrong. Let's say you have, I'll just give the example that I know. Let's say you have an eyeliner pencil, right? That's like an easy example. So that's clear when you take that and you color on your face, that is going to be tzoveya. That's very simple. That's obvious. That's understandable. What about when I take a powder blush and it just stays on my face, but then it, I guess it just disintegrates after a certain period of time. I'm a total Amma Aretz, which I'm fine admitting to. But right, is that what happens? No? Somebody help me here? Does nobody wear makeup here? Because then we'll just stop the discussion. Okay, let's see what Rav Moshe says. So Rav Moshe gets into, I love when he writes Hebrew words in English. I'm sorry, English words in Hebrew, and I'm trying to figure out what he means. So let's see what he says in our Chaim. Chelak Aleph Siman Kuf Yud Daled, Rav Moshe discusses lehiskashe leisha belipstick. When you have a woman who wants to wear lipstick, and then he writes ba'odem, which means red lipstick. So if you want to wear green lipstick, it's the same. But he's just assuming that a woman is going to wear red lipstick. Ubedvar imuter leisha lehiskashe belipstick. Is a woman allowed to wear lipstick on Shabbos or not? Now, obviously, to put the makeup or lipstick on before Shabbos is not a problem at all. Of course, that's what we're supposed to do. But the question then becomes, on Shabbos morning, obviously, it would look much better if we would be able to freshen up a little bit. So are we allowed to do that or not? Says Rav Moshe, Hinei asura mishnei ta'amim. He said there are two reasons why one would not be allowed to do that on Shabbos. Number one, me'isur memachik, because we have a malacha that you're not allowed to smooth out a surface. And here, when you have a lipstick, as you smooth it out onto your lips, you're now creating a new layer at the top of the lipstick. And number two, me'isur tzviya. The second problem is that it's a issue of tzoveya, that my face used to be one color, and now I'm taking makeup or lipstick, and I'm going to change it to now be another color. So that's the same problem as tzoveya. Actually, the isur memachik had an interesting shaila once. We had a camper in Camp Simcha who had very, very sensitive skin, a very, very big problem that he had. And as a result of that, there was only he had to shower every day because of the condition that he had, and meaning we couldn't not shower him on Friday night or Shabbos morning. I think he had to be showered multiple times a day. But the question was that the only soap that he was able to use was a bar of soap. Whatever it was that was in the liquid soaps was problematic for his skin. And we had one bar of soap that we were given that didn't have whatever ingredients some of the others had, some kind of oil, some kind of problem that would have been very a great irritant to his skin. So the question was, his counselor had to shower him on Shabbos, and the counselor was really not sure what to do about the bar of soap, which is an isser of memachik. Very interesting shaila, right? Because as you smooth off a bar of soap, now a new layer comes on. Not a new layer comes on, but basically one layer is removed, then another one is removed, and then you keep making it smaller and smaller. So that is the problem with lipstick as well. The imhu lach shaleka memachik. What if it is a fluid? I don't know, is there such a thing as a liquid lipstick?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Yesh al kapanim isur tzviya. So Ramosha says, I have a great idea to get around the problem of mamachik. Instead of using a solid, why not use a liquid? So he says, then the problem is you get to the second issue. What's the second issue? Soveya. When you put it on your skin, you're still going to then change the color of your skin to be a different color. But if a woman wants to just take blush or some kind of powder and put it on her face, says her Moshe, of course, it's going to make you look different than you were, but that's not really tzoveya. Why is it not tzoveya? Why is it not tzoveya? What? It's enemus kayemus kalal. Because as we said before, the only way to violate the isra of tzoveya, the isra of changing the color of something, is if it's something that will be more than just so transient, something that will last some period of time. But over here, where you have a powder that's really not going to last at all, then we assume that that would not be a problem at all. That is the way Rav Moshe Feinstein writes. If you look here in Rav Avadia, he feels the same way. Let's see what he says. Mikol Makom Nira, She'ikir Lahakel Mitamim Hanel. The Tshuvas Yechave Das is actually an amazing set of tshuvas. I don't know if you've ever read any of them. The Yechave Das is a number of volumes. And this was actually a radio program in Israel every Matzah Shabbos. People used to call in, ask Rav Avadia Yosef questions on the spot, and he would give these answers. Now, what's amazing is he gave the answers, but he didn't just give the answers. He gave the answers on the spot with every single source one can ever imagine. So you look through the Tshuvas Yechave Das, and these are just random questions that people called about. And he not only had a whole structure of an answer formulated for each question that was asked, but also with every single one of the Rishonim and the bottom line of the Psak Halacha, all of that was presented on the radio. It's just amazing to think about it. So here, somebody once called in and asked him about using makeup on Shabbos, and he said the following: Mikol Makom Nira Shehaikar LaHakol Mitam Manal Bein BaAfkas Powder Levano Bein BaAfkas Powder Tzivonis. If you have a powder that has some kind of color on it, I don't know, maybe they have some that are a different complexion and others that are just white. He says either one are not a problem at all. Hol V'Chal Iker Iser HaAvara Srak B'Shabbos Umid Rabbanan. Number one, he says, in the first place, putting makeup on one's face is only midirabbanan. V'gam hu shani b'machlokis ki mivur b'sefer ha'ma'orosh ha'arifa b'ala shlama u'shmitu din zeh me'el chaseyem. Anyway, he gets into a whole discussion here and he says, therefore he feels that this would not be a problem at all, as long as, he makes a provision in the end, he says, as long as there is no cream or oil foundation inside of the powder. Because if there is, then that would continue to be a problem. Okay, look at the last two lines, because I find them fascinating. Re'ei l'Rabbeinu Elazar ben Nasan hara'avan simin shin nun dalet. You see that where it has the parentheses? End of the line, simin shin nun dalet. So he quotes here, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim. He was one of the Bali Atosis in the 11th century. So the Ra'avan writes as follows. She hischashev lahakel benidon kazeh. He was also asked a question about a woman putting on some kind of powder on Shabbos. So if you get around the problem of Tzoveya, and you get around the problem of Mamachik, so then he says that he thinks they can use a powder. Why? Mitam shelo yizganu al ba'aleyem. Befrad le'isha haragila bakach. If you have a woman who always wears makeup, and then the one day a week that she's not going to put anything on her face is going to be Shabbos. So how's she going to feel? And how's her husband going to feel? And therefore, he felt, one of the Rishonim felt, that we have to be mekel, b'shal sofim halacha achara mekel, and therefore he says, this is why he felt that it would be the appropriate thing to do. And I'm just saying, personally, I've heard people say this to me, and I find it very strange. When you're home with your own husband, you don't get dressed up. When you're going to be with other people, then you get dressed up as fancy as can be. It's the opposite. It should be. The person who you want to be most attractive to is your spouse. The one who you should be most excited to be with is your spouse. Now, the protocol is that when we go to a wedding or we go somewhere else, we get dressed up differently. It's true. But I always find it strange that women say that, oh, when I'm home, and when it's just me and my husband. Yeah, it's you and your husband, and that's where it's very important to build a foundation. Your husband is the one who should find you most attractive. Other people's husbands should not be finding you most attractive. So that's why I just think it's an interesting point here, but this is really what the Ra'avan says. He says, Shelo yizganu al baleim is a very important consideration that we do need to think about, to the point that he felt that we would even say that we would try to bypass some of the Yisur d'Rabbanan potentially of Tzaveh on Shabbos in order to allow somebody to put on makeup when we otherwise may not have. Okay? So I think that's just something interesting to be aware of. Now, the Sefer Yerayim, who was one of the Bali Atosis in the 12th century, one of the Gedolei Chachmei Ashkenaz, he writes the following. Everyone with me so far? We're good? Okay. So the Sefer Yerayim, is all of this obvious to everybody? Is this...
It's very interesting.
What?
It's very interesting.
That's what you think. I'm curious. Okay, so the Sefer Yerayim writes as follows. Sefer Yerayim says, what happens when I'm eating strawberries on Shabbos? Does anybody know? Maybe you could Google it quickly. When did utensils start to be used? Like, was that already around in the 12th century? Like, when they ate strawberries, did they eat it with their hands?
The Middle Ages, like 1,000 years ago.
So it's possible that not everybody used a fork back then, right? Could be. But even if they did, sometimes when you're eating a fruit, you just, take something with your hands. So the question is, after I'm eating some kind of fruit that actually leaves a colorful residue on my hands, what do I then do? Ever think about that? So actually, I was in Baltimore last night, as I mentioned. And because we were in Baltimore and we were in Florida as well, so the people who were hosting us for dinner were very excited to serve a very nice dinner. Not because I was there. I was one of the flies on the wall, but because of the guests who were there. And they kept... It was actually interesting because they kept bringing out wine. Now, I don't appreciate wine at all. I think the maximum wine I could drink is like Moscato d'Asti. That's like my, that's my absolute highest level of tolerance. But some people enjoy wine a lot. And it was actually fascinating because there's a machlokas between the Sephardim and Ashkenazim about whether you make... Under which conditions do you make a bracha of hatova hametiv when you have a wine that is an exciting wine? I don't know if anybody here is a wine connoisseur, but that is a discussion. So we were in someone's house, they brought out a bottle of wine, and everybody made a burger piragafen, and this guy was giving a whole background about the wine. It's 250 years old, it's the most expensive wine in the world. I went to who knows where to get it for you, special because I knew you were coming, a whole big deal. I'm just sitting there like, don't waste it on me. give it to someone who will appreciate this. So he brings it out. And Rav Amar made a bracha of Hatova Ametiv, not only a Bor Peragafen, but also Hatova Ametiv. Fine. Then the bottle of wine was very quickly finished. And then he comes and brings out a different bottle of wine, and he gives the whole history. This is 300 years old, and it makes the other one look like nothing, and this is much better. Anyway, so he pours them again, and then he makes another Hatova and made to begin. So it was like fascinating. Every bottle of wine that they brought out was like a new excitement or something different. And they kept making brachas, but at some point I said to the guy, you know, every time you pour wine and it's dripping on the side, like it's killing your tablecloth. So I just went to get a napkin, I put it underneath, like, you know, why should his beautiful tablecloth get ruined? The guy was so offended, like, you're worrying about my tablecloth? Like, I'll throw it out, who cares? I'm like, but why should you ruin the tablecloth? Like, you know, I don't care that you can throw it out, but why would you do that? So the question actually is, on Shabbos, what would one do? What would one do on Shabbos? So what's the question? So the Sefer Yireim, as quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, says that if I'm eating tutim o peres hatzvuim, if I'm eating tutim are strawberries, or if I'm eating, let's say, a watermelon, other things that sometimes leave a colorful residue on my hands, what should I do? So let's see. I'm sorry, I didn't put it on here. So the Sefer Yireim says, Yizayer shelo yiga b'yadav hatzvuos b'begadav o b'mapa. Make sure, he says, not to touch your clean clothing with your dirty hands. Now, that's not just a practical consideration, because then you're going to get dirty. But it's beyond that. He says it's a problem of tzovea. Your shirt used to be white, and now you're going to make your shirt a different color because you had the strawberry residue on your hands, and therefore he says that would be something that we should try not to do. This is quoted the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, but the later poskim have completely rejected it. And they said that this is not applicable at all, and it really is something that they do not accept. Why is that? Because they say the whole melacha tzovea is when I do something derech tzvia, when I try intentionally to make something a different color. But over here, when I'm drying, when I'm wiping off my hands from something that got on them, I'm not trying to be tzovea the napkin. All I'm trying to do is derech lichluch. I'm actually making the napkin dirty. I'm not being tzovea at a different color. I'm making it unusable because of the dirt that I'm putting on it. And therefore, that would not be defined as a part of the melacha of tzovea. And therefore, many, many of the achronim disagree with this psak of the Shulchan Aruch, and they feel there is nothing wrong at all. And therefore, the Magen Avraham and the Mishneh Berurah quote this, obviously because the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, but they say, if a person wants to be machmir, so maybe if you have strawberries on your hands, maybe go wash it off in the sink instead of putting it onto a napkin. Don't get involved in the whole tzaveya issue. But Me'ikar Adin, we hold that we do not have to be machmir. In fact, there's a fascinating story in the Sefer Leket Yosher, who's a Talmud of the Trumas Hadeshen, where he writes that on one occasion, on a Shabbos, he got a little cut. Obviously, it wasn't a dangerous cut, but he got a small cut, and he was looking around to try to figure out what can he put on it to stop the bleeding. So he sees a napkin here, he sees a napkin over there, and he says, oh, they're all white, that's a problem with tzoveya. So Me'ikra, then we hold this mutter. And obviously, if it was dangerous, he should have done whatever he needed to do, but it wasn't dangerous. He just needed to wipe off the blood, so what should he do? So he decided to go find some kind of substance where it wouldn't be a problem of tzoveya at all. But again, this is something that is spoken about in Shulchan Aruch. Then we get to a discussion that the Rishonim have as well. What about people who like to dip their food into a drink to make it taste differently, right? So one of my kids likes to take matzah, even not on Pesach. He likes to take matzah and dip it into his grape juice. You ever saw a kid who does this? So like here we are, post-Sukkot, he's still doing it from Pesach. And the question is, are you allowed to do that on Shabbos or not? As you do that, obviously the matzah is going to change colors. So would you say that there's a prohibition of tzvia ba'ochlim, or perhaps not? So the Rishonim say that there is no problem to put bread into a soup, even though it's going to turn the bread a different color, or to put matzah into a wine or a grape juice wouldn't be a problem. Why? Because they explain that that would be something that is not derech tzvia. It's not a normal thing to try to make food a different color. That would not be a problem at all. Now, my father has often pointed out, if you have a kid who's insisting that they're only going to drink their whatever it is if you put food coloring in it, then that would be tzoveya. Why? Because this whole idea of ein tzviya ba'ochlin is only because I have no intention at all to be tzoveya the piece of bread or to be tzoveya the matzah. I don't care if it's this color or that color. And this is not the normal way for a person to change the way something looks, that would not be defined as tzoveya at all, and therefore we would say that is not part of the malacha at all. However, if you are trying to be tzoveya, that would potentially be a major problem. That would be a malacha on Shabbos, even if we're only talking about something that is tzviya ba'ochlin. So the Shulchan Aruch actually discusses this. Let's see. Shulchan Aruch gives a different case, and he says, what about putting pepper in the soup on Shabbos? So what do you say about that? When you put pepper in the soup, it obviously makes the soup much darker. So the soup used to be clear, and now the soup is going to be black. So am I allowed to do that? Now, I could have argued that this is such a bad example because pepper, I don't think it blends in to change the color of the soup. It's just floating on top, and the soup looks black. So maybe it's not a perfect example. Let's see. What does the Shulchan Aruch say? Mutar lasis karchum b'tavshil b'shabes ve'en lachash mishum tzavea she'en din tzviya ba'ochlim, says the Shulchan Aruch explicitly. There is no problem of tzviya ba'ochlim. The Ramah gives another case, and he says, let's say I need to have a bottle of wine, I need to have a cup of wine to make Kiddushan or to make Abdella. And I don't have enough in one bottle, so I'll mix together two bottles. Now, one of them happens to be white wine, one of them is red wine. Says the Ramah, not a problem. Why? Because I'm not trying to make it red or to make it white. All I'm trying to do is fill up a cup of wine. Now, it so happens when I'm filling up both things together that I'm now going to have an outcome, which is that one color was changed, but that would not really be a problem at all. It so happens that the Chayyadim disagrees, and he says that he thinks that he doesn't see why there should be any difference. Soveya, soveya. But we generally are not machmer like the Chayyadim. And if we were machmer like the Chayyadim, as I mentioned, we would have a major problem with coffee on Shabbos, because the coffee actually does not float on top. It blends into the water itself, and it changes the entire color of the water. And therefore, we're lucky that the Shulchan Aruch paskins that ain't tzviya ba'ochlim, and therefore, we'd be allowed to make a coffee on Shabbos. Now, how you make coffee on Shabbos is a very, 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 very good question. Not simple at all. Maybe we'll have to talk about that at some point. But making coffee on Shabbos is doable, but you have to know how to do so. Yeah, question?
Like Kool-Aid or pink lemonade.
What about it?
Can you make that on Shabbos?
Kool-Aid or pink lemonade? Just if, what do? You put
you
like
put
a powder in
water.
And it turns pink?
Yeah.
But you're not doing it to turn it pink?
I mean, one can argue that pink lemonade isn't like a thing and you're just making it pink for no reason.
And that's why it should be fine.
That's why it shouldn't be fine, because then you're making it pink because you want it pink, no other reason.
You don't want it pink. You don't care.
You want it pink.
If let's say you had the mysterious package and it turns out to be blue, you would drink it anyway. You're not 5 years old.
If you had pink lemonade and regular lemonade, can you argue that the pink lemonade is...
Oh, meaning you're doing it because you want to distinguish between the two? You want people to know this is pink lemonade and this is that?
You just want pink lemonade.
I don't know. You know, yesterday there was a meeting of Rabbanim in Baltimore. Like 25 Rabbanim came together to ask questions to my father and Rav Shlomo Amar. So one of the Rabbanim there asks, he says, you know, they make these things now, they're not tacos, but they're soft. I forgot what they're called. They're not pitas, but they're like, what? Isn't it called a wrap? That's what I thought. Why wasn't anyone saying a wrap? No, he called it something with a T. What's it? Tortilla. Isn't tortilla crunchy?
Yeah, soft.
Is that what they're called? A soft tortilla? That's what they call it? So they were trying to describe to Rav Amar in Hebrew, which they spoke horribly, what a tortilla is. So he says, Maze ze lafa? No, ze lo lafa. Maze ze mekaskes? Anyone speak Hebrew here? So everyone's looking at him like, what's kaskes? So I thought it was like a cracker. The kaskes means does it crumble when you eat it? Does it crunch? Well, you're an Israeli. Right, so the kaskes means what? So that was the question. They were trying to figure out what bracha to make on such a thing. A whole, I don't know, everyone was arguing about this thing. But I thought it was fascinating that they were trying to describe it to my father and Rav Amar, and both of them were like, we've never seen such a thing. We don't know what this is. And finally I said, isn't that a wrap? Isn't that, so he said, maza wrap? I'm like, all right, forget it. We'll go back to other things. Anyway, So I don't know exactly.
Okay.
I'm not so familiar, yeah.
Like this other type of thing, like a fruit roll-up type of candy that on the other side of it, there's like a tattoo that you can like stick it on your tongue, and if you keep the candy like on your tongue for a long enough amount of time, then you'll get like a cool like SpongeBob on your tongue or something like that.
You mean to tell me all these years that I've seen fruit roll-ups, I never knew that?
Only some of them. Yeah.
Is that only recently?
No, it's like old, very old.
Like, but even anyway. As old as me? Wow.
I don't know.
This is terrible. I'm deprived.
Like,
do they still make them?
I don't know.
So what do you want to know? So I would assume in that case, In that case, you want it. That should be like...
It goes away.
What?
Like it only, it lasts for like shorter than... Like
shorter than the photo gray lenses?
Yeah, I think so. But it's like really on your tongue.
How can you eat things with doors on them? It's not a problem. Well, maybe we'll talk about that at one point, about eating, you know, about eating things with words on them. Also an interesting question. Well, there's a lot to talk about. I was actually scratching my head on the plane yesterday to say, like, okay, what should we talk about today? Now I'm learning. There's a whole lot to learn. So, Mirtz Hashem, we'll have many opportunities. So, just remind me that we should get back to all these things. Somebody should make note of it. But I don't know. I don't know exactly about that. But so the Mishnah Berurah does suggest when you're making a tea or a coffee, Mishnah Berurah says that maybe it would make sense that when you're doing so, you should pour the water onto the tea bag or the water onto the coffee. Now, I don't know, the coffee drinkers in the room, does that change the dynamic of the coffee? Does it taste different if you do it that way than the other way? So he says, it would be an act of tzoveya if I'm dumping coffee beans into a water, that's like taking paint and stroking it onto the wall. But here, where I'm putting the water onto the coffee, I'm not really being tzoveya, I'm pouring water into a cup. Now it turns out that it's gonna eventually turn a different color. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah suggests, that maybe you should be machmir, but that's just his suggestion. Yeah.
Is it the same for tea?
Same for tea, that's what he says, yeah. That's what he writes. He actually writes it about tea. I'm just extending it to coffee, but that's where he says it. Okay, now, here's a very interesting question. Anyone knows what a URS is? Yeah, question?
Sorry, with tea on Shabbos, aren't you supposed to put the water first? Because then it's cooking?
Well, it depends how you make tea and what kind of, right? Meaning, making tea on Shabbos is also complicated because of bishul considerations. So, once you get around the bishul considerations, he says, then you should do it this way. Yeah, question?
I was going to say, then you have to use a clear V then if you're doing it in this way?
I don't think so. I think that's like going a little bit too far. But maybe when we talk about bishul, we should raise all these questions. Okay, so anyone know what a URS is? Baruch Hashem, you're lucky that you don't. A URS is a urine region strip. So there are people who need to use these all the time, either because you have a diabetic who needs to check their sugar levels, and the way to do that is by taking a urine sample, and if the outcome is a certain way, then it's going to change colors as you do it. Or, very often, we have a situation where we'll have a couple who's struggling with infertility, and the woman has to monitor exactly where her cycle is up to and what's going on in the body. And the way to do that is that one of the ways to assist in monitoring the fertility and where the cycle is up to is by using a URS. And the question is, what is that person supposed to do if they need to use a URS on Shabbos? By sticking that little strip into the urine sample, you know that by doing so, it's going to change the color of the strip, right? Either it's going to be positive or negative or whatever it's going to be, it's going to change colors. And the same was when we had actually a lot of the corona tests, right? People took corona tests on Shabbos, and that was a big shaila, because as you're doing that, something's going to change color as a result of the test that you're taking, yeah?
Isn't that the same for coffee? Because you know that if you pour the water in,
it should be the same. That's the question. Right, so the question is, what's a person supposed to do? What is a person supposed to do who needs to monitor their sugar levels or who needs to monitor their bodily cycle and needs to know exactly what's going on? Would they be able to use that on Shabbos? You're very correct in saying that we shouldn't be allowed to use it on Shabbos, but let's see.
You're allowed to pour the water into the coffee.
Oh, you're saying in the other direction?
Yeah.
Okay, but here you're taking a piece of paper, you're putting it into a solution, and you know exactly what you're doing.
And you know that the water is going to turn colors.
I know, but this is L'shem Tzoveya.
The water
right?
Doesn't change colors, the paper changes colors.
Yes.
Food.
What was that?
The purpose of this is
to change the color, right? So that's why this is a different question. So let's see, and I think this is a very important shaila. I've actually gotten this shaila before. So let's read together what they say about this. Okay, we're ready? Everyone with us? Let's see. Anyone else hot in here? Got to go back to the first floor. Okay. So let's look at Bidvar She'ilaso. Ha'emuter b'shabes larach b'dika b'maklon ha'meshanet sivo a'idei chasifa l'mei raglayim u'meshtam shembo k'dei livdok as ramat ha'sukar. And what we're using it for is to be able to know the sugar levels etzol chole sakeret by someone who's diabetic, v'chein l'kvoa es ha'yamim ha'puriyim shel ha'isha, and also in a way to try to help somebody who has a complication in their fertility, k'dei lazer l'laharos, in order to help and assist a woman to be able to become pregnant. Nira diyesh l'hakal b'zeh l'chole she'en bo sakana, o b'shas ha'tzorach gadol mikama ta'amim univa'er. So we explain why it is that there's room to be makel to allow one to use that on Shabbos. Turn the page to the other side. Aleph. Reason number one is kvar danu gedolei azman b'malacha shenasas b'chepza omed li'ibud b'klayon miyadi. What if a person has something that is going to have a malacha performed to it, but it's going to disappear immediately? Not disappear that it's going to disappear physically, but it's going to be disposed of immediately. Meaning after 2 minutes, this is irrelevant. I needed to take the test. Once the test is taken, I don't keep the results. It's gone. Im havi malacha miskayemes da'afsha be'etzem ha'malacha kagon ha'tfira ve'hatzviya ru'uya lehiskayim. Of course, if I leave this strip without throwing it in the garbage, it's not going to change back to the other color. It's going to remain forever. However, the nature of that which I just did is to be disposed of. And that is a big chiddush. Everyone understands the difference? Am I making sense of the difference here? There's a difference between something that in its own nature is going to revert back to what it was before, and this case, which if I left it as is, it won't revert back. It's going to remain the same. But I'm disposing of it. I'm throwing it out because I don't want to keep it. So is that also called a malacha she'ena shel kayama? Is that also called of temporary nature, even though it's going to last for a long time? It's just that I'm disposing of it, and therefore it's no longer here. So that's the question. Since after 2 minutes it no longer has any purpose or value at all, and he brings a fascinating proof. The proof is, we know that on Yom Kippur, there was a lot of avodah that was done in the Beis HaMikdash, and one of the steps that had to be taken in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur was, they used to tie a string around one of the animals, and they would wait to see that string would turn a different color. Correct? So the question then is, how can you tie the string onto the animal? So you may think the question is, it changes colors, right? That's not a question. Why?
It happens.
What?
That's passive.
That's miraculous. Meaning, I didn't do anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to change colors. So that's why that's not a problem. The problem is, how am I allowed to tie the string onto the animal if, after all, we know that kosher is also malach on Shabbos? To tie something and make a knot is not permissible on Shabbos, unless it's like a slip knot that one makes on a shoe. But if you're making a real knot on Shabbos, that would not be permissible. So how am I allowed to make a real knot when it comes to tying that string onto the animal on Yom Kippur? And the answer that the Maharil Diskin gives is, well, it's Eina Shel Kayama. It's only of temporary nature. Why is it of temporary nature? Why is it of temporary nature? It's about to be thrown off a cliff. No, but that's not temporary nature. It's going to be there forever. It's just that it's no longer going to be relevant to me in 5 minutes from now because that animal's not going to be alive anymore. So that also, he argues, would be considered temporary nature, even though the nature of what I'm doing is not temporary at all. It's going to stay there. If all stays status quo, nothing changes at all. It's just the fact that I'm disposing of the item itself, and therefore it makes it of temporary nature. And that's the argument that he uses here. Maybe we should say this is also considered to be of temporary nature. And then he gets into a little bit more of an argument to explain why he thinks that this should be something that is permissible. And if you look, we're not going to go through the whole thing. You can do it on your own. But if you look here on the bottom, Klalo Shel Davar. You see two paragraphs from the end? Klalo Shel Davar. The bottom line is, Ein soveya ela yidei nesinas tzeva. The only time that it's considered soveya is when you have somebody who's putting something into another material that is supposed to dye it, that's supposed to change its color. V'lo begorim shinoi tzeva yidei tguva kimit. Not when I have something that chemically, as a result of putting one thing into another, chemically it now has a whole nother image to me. Afsha ein li rayas li yisod zemi kamakam pashut hu be'enai bisvara. And he argues that even though he has no proofs to that point, pashut hu be'enai bisvara. He says it seems obvious to me that when you make a chemical reaction happen and as a result of that something changes colors, that is not called soveya. It's surprising to me that he says that that's so obvious. I'm sure there are many who feel that it's not obvious at all. I think that's a tremendous chiddush. When I put the strip into the urine sample, it doesn't change immediately. It takes some time. So maybe you can say that's also a grama. Anyway, for that and many other reasons, there are those who are makel about the shaila, but I think it just brings out the point that soveya has many, many practical and interesting applications. In fact, the Svarim actually write, if you ever noticed in some bathrooms, in some people's homes or in hotels or whatever it may be, sometimes they have something in the toilet that changes all the water inside to turn blue every time you flush. Ever think about that? Is that a problem of soveya or perhaps not? Okay, so I'm going to leave you with that question. Something to think about. Mirtz Hashem, we'll see everybody next week. I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll...